This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Ben Wilson, college baseball play-by-play guy. Actually does a great job with a lot of sports, the play-by-play. But he has seen a number of these teams that are in the College World Series in person. Excited to get his thoughts on that. The NBA Finals, and the NBA Finals is where we will start, because I mentioned going into the Wednesday show here that Game 3 series is going one of two different directions. OKC wins, and people look at the series like it's a formality, a foregone conclusion. You know, Game 1 was a fluke. It was a blip on the radar. Or we're headed for an Indiana win, and it's nervous time here for OKC, and it is the latter. It is option number two here, door number two, as OKC now is on the brink, not of being eliminated, but on the brink of being in some major trouble, down 3-1. And you could make a very strong case the winner of this game four wins the series. If Indy gets up 3-1, I'm not sure they're losing three in a row, even with two of the possible three in OKC. And if OKC is able to get it to 2-2, I think they would be in good shape with two of the final three in their building. But game four is going to be very exciting. And you could say, you know what, this series didn't have a lot of juice going in. The ratings haven't been great. You know, two small markets, big heavy favorite, 4 or 5 day layoff, nonsense. All that stuff is out the window. We are now looking at an outstanding series, and you can look at it this way. You can look at it, unless you think OKC is going to win the next three, which, you know, watching Indiana this whole postseason, it's hard to beat that team three times in a row, especially with two of the three in Indiana, and they are guaranteed now a second game in Indiana. Not only is game number four in Indiana, but they're going to have a game number six in Indiana as well. Unless you think you're going to beat that team three times in a row, we're either going to have a game seven, which we haven't had in almost a decade, 2016, the Warriors and the Cavs, which is an iconic game. So we either headed for a game seven or an all-time upset here with the Pacers stunning the Thunder and winning the series, and not just a stunning final result, but my goodness, can you imagine if the Pacers actually pull this off and won the championship? It would certainly be the most unlikely championship of my lifetime, and it would go down as one of the great runs in sports history. I think it's already been the greatest run of comebacks, the greatest string of comebacks I've ever seen in sports history. I'm open to different ideas, different, you know, options as far as teams that have strung together comebacks like they have. They didn't really need a comeback last night, or in game number three, I should say. They were down 32-24 after one. You know, you turn the TV on, it's 15-6 OKC. You figure, all right, OKC, maybe maybe this is just them taking control and they're going to, you know, dominate the rest of the series. OKC's up 15-6. They're up 32-24. They were down by four at halftime, but they regained the lead. You know, lead changed hands a bunch of times, as it does in the NBA. Up 95-91 with the ball in the fourth quarter, 9 minutes or so to go. Jalen Williams turns it over. OKC can't get a defensive rebound as Indy misses. Nembhard on a second chance scores. Immediately, O'Connell picks off the inbound pass. Just sloppy inbounding by OKC. Heads up play by McConnell. Immediately, they tie the game at 95, and it was all Indy from there. Indy wins, and there's not much drama there in the last couple minutes. A lot of missed free throws by SGA and the Thunder. They don't have, you're seeing, you know, the concerns people had about the Thunder, the lack of experience, the second go-to scorer. You are seeing those things play out, because there's not a lot of places you go to for a bucket that you trust in the last few minutes. And OKC laying six here in game number four, I would want no part. I don't know how you watch the Pacers these whole playoffs and you can say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to lay 6 points on the road against that team. I know, you know, neutral court, even teams, OKC's got the record and the net rating. And look, I picked them in a sweep and I had my reasons. And even after two games, even though it was 1-1, I didn't feel like that was just a crazy pick with how OKC dominated in 95-98% of that series. But it's 2-1 now, and Indy's getting six at home in game four. That would be the only way I would look. I would take the points with Indy. And OKC still minus 220 favorite here at DraftKings to win the series. Pacers plus 185. If you want to go correct games, correct series score, OKC in seven is plus 170. That is now the short shot, and it does feel like it's headed probably some way, one way or another, for a seventh game, I would think. Thunder in six plus 200. Pacers in six is plus 500. Pacers in seven is plus 700. Pacers in five is 11-1. I can't see the Pacers winning the next three or winning the next two. That would be three in a row. Would you get greedy and say, hey, if the Pacers are going to win, they're probably not going to win a game seven. They're probably not going to win in five. Go for the 5-1 payout. Probably not a bad idea. If you got to a game seven, you could probably play. You're not going to get 7-1 that you're getting now, but it's going to be hard to win a game seven on the road. I think the 5-1 payout's the most interesting of of all those. But I think you take the six with game four. I think that's the play here. I think it'll be close. Life on the line. I think OKC probably wins, but you know how shaken I've been since game one of these finals about picking against the Pacers. They've spooked me to the point where I have a hard time, even though I thought OKC was probably going to roll in game two. I thought, I'm not laying points against this team, laying 11, 11 and a half. It would only be towards taking the points here with the Pacers. It's just they've converted me. They've convinced me that even if they don't win the finals, I am terrified, absolutely terrified here to play against them. So it would be Pacers plus six or nothing. I don't hate the idea of taking plus 500 for them to win in six. Figuring, you know what, home court holds up. They split the next two, and then you got a chance to close out in six. So a lot of different ways to play it. I think if you gave me a redo here on a prediction, probably OKC in seven, but it's starting to creep in my head and probably should have creeped in sooner. This idea that the Pacers could actually be lifting the trophy here in another week or 10 days, which would again would just be impossible to put into context the unlikelihood of this Pacers team actually winning a championship. It really would be. So we're not going to go there yet, but they are halfway home and they've got game number four at home. They've got a game number six guaranteed to them, which would be at home. And we are headed for a hell of a final. Again, unless OKC is going to win the next three with two of them in Indiana, unless the OKC is going to win the next three, we're either getting a monster upset or we're getting a game seven, which nobody outside of Indiana, I'm sure somebody somewhere picked Indiana or picked it to go seven. I know Matt Humans, who I do the VSiN primetime shows with, he thought that seven was live. He made a bet on seven and six, which was a contrarian view. So those are looking like good picks. I think we're possibly, I mean, definitely possibly headed for a game seven. I think the game seven is the likely outcome, and you could bet now over under 6.5 games, and it's a basically a coin toss either way. So a hell of a final. You could say what you want about small markets, layoffs, the 4 or 5 day layoff between the conference finals, the NBA finals, a lot of things. There's no Kobe, there's no LeBron, there's no not Kobe, but there's no LeBron, there's no Steph. The Celtics were in it last year, and Luka, you don't have that star, you don't have the American star. There's a lot of things that I think the average fan may be having a hard time getting into the series for. Well, you're missing some serious drama here because the Pacers have a chance here to do something historic. The Thunder, this great regular season team, are now on the ropes, and we're looking at, for the first time in just about a decade here, a game seven. You can't beat a game seven of the NBA Finals. We're recording this right as the NHL game four here is dropping the puck. Man, possibly getting game seven of the NBA Finals and NHL Finals. That would be as good as it gets, especially. Once these series end, it's a lot of baseball, which I have no problem with. I love the baseball day to day, but the longer these series go, the more you have to talk about, the more you have to watch, the shorter the time to football season. So I'm all for it. I think we are obviously headed for a long series here. I don't think anyone thinks the Pacers are going to close this out in five, but a lot of drama here headed towards a game four on a Friday night. I think the winner of this game probably wins the series. OKC, if they're 2-2, I don't I think with two out of three at home, they're in good shape. And if Indy's up 3-1, I know two of the three after that would be in OKC, but I think they'd be in good shape. So, an understatement, an obvious statement to say a lot is on the line here. Friday night game four. I'm excited for it. I would only look towards taking the six. I'll take the Pacers plus the six here in the fourth game. I think this is going to be down to the wire. Close game, exciting game, toss-up game. I'm surprised this is six. I'll be surprised if it closes six. I know what all the net ratings say about the Thunder. I know all their metrics, 80 and 18 or whatever they were coming into the series, and then a million blowouts. I get it. I get it. That was a justified price for them into the series, but their youth, their lack of a second scorer, all of the people that had nitpicks, the picks people had to nit, however that saying goes, are all showing through here as they have looked like a younger, confused, just I think composed is a good word. I think Jeff Parles had a tweet where the Pacers have been the more composed team. I think that's a really good way of putting it. The Pacers have been a more composed team, and the Thunder just look young. They look frantic. They look panicked, and I'm excited here for a game number four. Pacers, Scary thing for OKC, they shot the three well. They shot 45% from three, but you only got up 22 attempts. You need more attempts than that. You need more volume there. You can't only have, even though the percentage was good, the efficiency was good, you need more quantity. You know, you need more volume there. 22 attempts is just not going to get it done, even if you do shoot a good percentage there. It's just the way the game is played here. And the Pacers didn't shoot great from three, which is another thing that's scary for OKC, is you won the three-pointers, you know, by 10%. Or so. Pacers shot 33% and OKC, like I said, 45.5%, and you still lost the game. So a nervous 48 hours, an exciting game four. Should be a lot of fun. Total 225.5. I don't think that six will last. I just think that six is too high. I just don't know how you watch the Pacers this entire postseason and say, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna lay 6 points on the road against that team. That's just not, regardless of what happens, that is not a fun 2.5 hours. So excited for that. Excited college baseball. The World Series starts here on Friday, Coastal Carolina against Arkansas. I'm sorry, Coastal Carolina against Arizona. With you think Coastal Carolina, that's a little mid-major, small school. Arizona's this big power school. You think Arizona would be the favorite if you didn't really, you know, if you weren't tuned into this, if you weren't watching. But that is the opposite. Coastal Carolina has got some monster pitching, apparently. Not that I'm sitting here watching all Coastal Carolina games, but they've got a bunch of studs, bunch of major league potential pitchers, and not just potential major league pitchers, but guys that are highly regarded in terms of prospects for Coastal Carolina. Deep pitching, good pitching. So Coastal Carolina minus 230. Total is 9. Arizona plus 175. And then Louisville, Oregon State. Oregon State, $1.90 favorite. Total of 10. And then the Saturday games, UCLA minus 280 favorite against the darlings of the tournament, Murray State, with a total of 11. And then LSU, Arkansas. The two short shots in the tournament square off right away. LSU and Arkansas, about a coin flip game with a total of 9. I want to root for Murray State. I'd love to see Murray State win. I just don't know. Can you get past, especially being in the same bracket as Arkansas and LSU? That's going to be a tough bracket to get out of. So no place for me. I know the unders have done really well here. People think, oh, it's metal bat, college baseball, all the best offenses, over. Well, that's an under park the last few years. The wind, the dimensions, a lot of foul ground. It's hard to hit the ball out of there. So it's counterintuitive, but the unders have actually done well. I don't know, you know, enough about these projected numbers. It's probably baked in now when you're seeing a total of 9. That's much higher than it's been in the past years. You would routinely see 11.5, 12.5, 13.5 in these games. When you're seeing a 9, I know the unders have done well recently, but it might be a situation where the cat's out of the bag and the odds makers have adjusted properly, which, look, no edges last forever. Any angle you think you have, it's probably not going to last long. The books are pretty quick enough to catch up to this stuff. So excited to talk some NBA finals, some college baseball with Ben Wilson. That is next. This Should a Bit More podcast. All right, we are back. Should a Bit More podcast. He is one of the great up and coming play by play men in the country. Not even up and coming. He's here. He's arrived. He is the great Ben Wilson. Arena Football League. You tell me, college basketball. What don't you do, Ben? Thanks for coming on, man. How's everything?
Hey, I'm good, my man. I'm trying to get into the underwater basket weaving business, but that's shockingly a tough nut to crack. Yeah, right now, arena football. I just finished up my college baseball play-by-play, so it's fun right now watching these 8 teams go to Omaha. I've seen 3 of them in person this year, so it's cool for me getting to know these coaches. You know, you talk to them, have these production meetings, and now you see where they're at here, the ultimate goal. So that's been pretty cool. And yeah, once we turn the calendar to next year, yeah, a lot of college basketball has kind of been the main thing once we're in winter. So whatever keeps me busy, try to catch up with you, Will Hill, every so often. So I appreciate you. You didn't limit me to just a one time caller inner. I'm back, which is great.
Yes, is this a second or third time coming on?
I think it's multi. We're in the multi range, which is good. So I lose track. As long as I get a repeat invite, I feel like I'm taken care of.
All right, since you brought it up, let's start with the college baseball. I guess I'll just I'll ask it this way. How many of these teams have you seen in person?
So I've seen 3. Arkansas, who is the favorite right now, plus 195, and they certainly looked the part. They're the rightful favorite. The issue is that it's a really tough path. I mean, if Arkansas wins the College World Series, they'll have had to eliminate, I would argue, 2 of the 3 best teams in the country. They already eliminated Tennessee in the Super Regionals, and they'll have to eliminate LSU, who is the second favorite right now, and eliminate LSU, that wouldn't even guarantee Arkansas the title, they would still be in the College World Series final the way the brackets play out. So I've seen Arkansas, a really good team. I just don't know how much value there is betting on them right now since they are the favorite. They've got the really tough draw. I think if anything, maybe if Arkansas drops a game, they go to the loser's bracket and they've got to win two straight against LSU. Maybe that's when, if you kind of do the math in your head, like mechanical parlay versus future, maybe their odds drift enough to where it warrants a long shot on them, because they've definitely got the horses to, even if they go in the loser's bracket, to come from behind and win it all. So I've seen them, seen Louisville and Arizona, and Louisville's kind of been the team I earmarked way back early on outside of the big contenders. So I loved Clemson as far as the contenders early. Unfortunately, they crapped the bed in the regionals, could not hold serve at home. But Louisville was 6-1 to win the Vanderbilt region. They were in the same region as the number one overall seed, Vandy. I bet them for Friday. They're an underdog coming out in game number one against Oregon State. And their ace, Patrick Forbes, it's amazing, Will, that some of the arsenals that these dudes have at the college level, like Forbes, 98 fastball, 89 changeup, 83 slider. And this is college baseball we're talking about. I mean, it's just amazing the growth, the development of these guys pitching wise. So I have backed Louisville. I think if you want to dive in as far as like a future strategy, you got to take somebody in bracket one, because that's clearly the weaker of the two brackets. And Louisville, I mean, 17-1, not a bad play. I don't mind that. Coastal Carolina to me is the best team in that region one, but I think if there's a long shot flyer you take, it's got to be in the top half, since you avoid both Arkansas and LSU.
You brought it up. I mentioned it just talking a little bit about college baseball, I think on my Wednesday show, where my takeaway just from watching these games here and there, and not that I'm watching everything, but I'm watching a decent amount of it, the arms, the velocity. It's not just the best pitchers on the best teams. It's, you know, the middle reliever on Murray State is just pumping 94, 95. I mean, you don't see a guy, you could watch all these games, you don't see a guy throwing under 95. It makes you wonder, you know, the future of baseball, if everyone's going to throw 98 plus. I mean, it's going to be so hard to hit the ball. Once these guys start spinning and locating it, the pitching, the arms, and just the ability to create velocity is just incredible.
Yeah, the number of guys, not only that, Will, but who have had not even one, but some guys have two Tommy John surgeries and they're still pitching. I mean, that's just become, like, Tommy John surgery is now just like, you know, getting your wisdom teeth out, it seems like, for these baseball guys. It's just, they don't even shrug a shoulder. It's like, all right, whatever, we'll do it, we'll move on, go through the process. Arkansas has a guy, some calling their games, this was early March, I want to say, true freshman comes out of the pen, Carson Wiggins, and he saved a few games this year. Guy throws 101, like, consistently. And I'm talking to my analyst at the time, Pat Combs, who pitched at Baylor, and you know, he was in the major leagues with the Phillies back in, I think, the late 80s, early 90s. I'm like, Pat, like, what is this guy doing in college? He's like, hey, this is the story now. Like, these guys get ridiculous amounts of NIL money. I shouldn't say ridiculous. It pales in comparison to what, you know, Cooper Flagg was getting at Duke. But, you know, these guys get NIL money. And it's like, okay, would you rather be drafted in the 12th round out of high school and be making peanuts in rookie ball, right, with no guarantee? Or do you go to college? You can't be draft eligible for 2 years, but we're going to get your nut covered in NIL, and you'll develop under, you know, really good staff, maybe pitch in the College World Series, and then maybe you're around one guy and get a much bigger signing bonus and be fast-tracked to the big leagues. I think that's kind of your answer, Will, with why we're seeing it with where it's at. And I definitely think, at least early in Omaha, not to take anything away from the bats, but it's a big park. It's a pitcher's park. Unders to me are a good play early in this tournament when all the teams have their best staffs available. So I'm looking like the Arizona Coastal Carolina game, even that, which is a 9 flat, and that's the lowest total on the board. I still like that under. And Coastal's got, I mean, multiple starters who had a sub 3 ERA in the regular season, which is kind of unheard of in college baseball. So yeah, your observation is completely spot on, and it speaks to the larger picture in college baseball right now.
Let's just kind of whip through some of these game by game. And you brought it up. It's the first game. It's Friday afternoon. And what I love about these games, too, you get day baseball, weekday baseball, once, you know, for about a week or so, where you just turn on a game, or you turn on the TV Wednesday, Tuesday, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you get a game on, which is nice here in the East Coast. But Arizona, pretty big dog, plus $1.75. And you mentioned you like the under of 9, plus +175 worth of nibble. Would you lay the run and a half with Carolina? How do you break this one down?
I was interested at first in taking that number with Arizona. It's just Coastal, the more you dive into what they've done, they've been pretty disrespected. They're actually, They were the only number one seed, Will, in their region. And remember, if you're in one seed, you're hosting. They were the only number one seed to not be favored in their own regional. They were plus 130. Florida was actually the favorite. So you think about Coastal's run here. They take out Florida, a pretty good SEC team who's been in College World Series multiple times the past few years. Then they have to go on the road. They go to Auburn, where they were pretty sizable underdogs, and they sweep a really good Auburn team. So two SEC blue bloods right there. They've won 23 straight games. As I mentioned, the two top pitchers they've got, both sub-3 ERAs. So they could really throw, and that's why I kind of like the under here, is they can, some of these teams, and they didn't release the totals till Thursday, and that was by design, these sports books, because it's a lot of times is a guessing game. It's not anything like Major League Baseball as far as knowing who the probable starters are. Most teams, they've got a Friday, Saturday, Sunday guy, as they call it. Friday night guy being your ace. Saturday, Sunday guys being your number two and number three. And often that gets thrown out of the window once you get to the postseason. But I do expect Coastal, whoever they throw, is going to be a stud. And Arizona's a team that when I saw them, the big question was they'd always been this great offensive team. But the big thing for Chip Hale, their coach, to answer, who is a former Diamondbacks manager, was, can we get some more consistency on the pitching staff? And they found it. And they've got a really good bullpen. Their closer, Tony Pluta, guy you'll appreciate that name, Will, has like 14 saves this year and like a sub-2 ERA, which you're pitching in the Big 12. That's a lot of hitters' parks, balls that are, especially in even in the Arizona home park, Kai Corbett in Tucson. I mean, balls are flying out left and right. It is oftentimes really difficult to see any sorts of staffs with numbers that good. And so that's a guy that they can use who's going to be fresh, rested. He can go multiple innings in a certain spot and be back the next day or two. So that's a spot I like to start off here, go under. That's, I think, yeah, bracket one to start off. And I already mentioned Louisville in game two. Plus 135 was, at last check, the best number I saw. But I definitely like that. I'm going to ride him over Oregon State.
Murray State, UCLA, a big -280 favorite. The highest total we see at 11. Anything for this game? And is there any path here for Murray State to do the unthinkable and actually be holding up the trophy here in a week or so?
Well, the run lines have been very kind on the Murray State side, even the games they've lost. Because in a lot of games, you're getting, again, this is not like betting MLB. You're getting 2.5, 3.5 with Murray State. And it's an offense that has been so hot the entire postseason. They've been really tough to get out at the plate. The thing you always worry about with the Racers is the pitching depth. And they clearly, of the eight teams, have the worst staff. But their defense has been one of the best in the country all year, especially, I mean, I'd argue one of the best, if not the best, you know, mid-major to small conference defensive club. So they do save their pitching staffs a lot of outs. I just wonder, okay, you've been really relying on the bats, right? Now it's a pitcher's park. You've got to string together hits. It's not just band boxes and, you know, 360-foot wall scraper home runs. And the defense really gets stressed and tested once you get to the bigger park at Charles Schwab up there in Omaha. So 11 is, you know, normally I'd look at that and go, okay, I would just want to autoplay Murray State overs. They're just a stay-away team for me, Will, to start, because there's so many directions they can go. When you factor in now the park that they're playing in, the run that they've been on, they've been pretty charmed to get some pitching staffs that were certainly banged up and played kind of right into their strength as an offensive team. And I mean, UCLA had to go through a really tough region on their own right. They were, I think, plus 105. They were favored, but not odds on. And they've looked really impressive all tournament. So it's been an awesome story. I'm probably going to stay away, maybe look at some, like once we get into the elimination games, assuming Murray State's there eventually. You might get, like, if it's Murray State LSU or Murray State Arkansas, Will, you're going to get a giant number and a pretty big run line that I don't think would be wouldn't be bad to put a stab on that once we get to that point.
Murray State winning it would be what? Unprecedented. I remember there was a Fresno State team that was like maybe under 500 or right around 500, I don't know, a decade or two ago, maybe 2008, something like that, that won it. I haven't followed this long enough and follow the odds to know, is this usually chalk, almost always chalk, not necessarily? Like, how would you categorize it if Murray State is able to make a run and actually win this thing?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, it would stun me from the sense that they're in the most loaded bracket, so they'd have to eliminate Arkansas and LSU, which is, I mean, that's the big talking point of how hard that would be. And look, we saw LSU. I mean, they were pushed to the wire by Arkansas Little Rock, who in a lot of senses was even worse than Murray State. So that's where these games, anything can happen. even, you know, even teams that have been long shots that were in blue blood conferences, like Ole Miss won it all, and they were 100-1 a couple of years ago, and by a lot of the bracketologists, they were the last team to get in. So baseball is one of those sports where you can expect the variance. Nothing would really surprise me. And with the – there's been a lot of – I've gotten a lot of questions of, okay, well, how is the, you know, the transfer portal – is it similar to college basketball, right, where the rich get richer and you see a divide play out in the tournament? It's really – it's not – I wouldn't say been the opposite, Will, but it's a situation where you've got so much good talent across all conferences in D1 baseball that, yes, the portal's – and NIL is always going to be a factor, and the best players are more likely to end up on big teams. But that really doesn't guarantee anything. It's just how, you know, your Yankees can spend a kajillion dollars every year, and they still might win 87 games and get bounced in the wild card round. Like, it's the same sort of principle that applies to college baseball. So, you know, I hesitate to use the word unprecedented with anything, especially when you've had the Fresno States of the world. I mean, Coastal Carolina won it all the last time they were here, and that was a huge upset. That was, what, 2016 or so? So it's not like anything would really stun me. It's just the odds do reflect that it is still a long shot at the same time.
Yeah, we're about a decade and a half past the kajillion dollar spending of the New York Yankees. That doesn't quite happen as much anymore, unfortunately.
I try to live in the past, Will, so, you know.
Just quickly, Arkansas, LSU, you talked about it briefly, but anything Arkansas, basically a coin toss game with a total of 9.
It's a fair price. I mean, I'd slightly lean Arkansas, but this is just a sit back and watch. Like, it'll be an amazing game. Like I said, I think the best angle to look at for either team, if you see them, whoever loses this game, right, they're going to have to they'll have to beat the loser of UCLA Murray State, which they'll be favored in. Then they'll have to beat whoever loses that. So let's say Arkansas beats LSU, right, and it's Arkansas UCLA. So LSU would then have to beat Murray State. They'd have to beat whoever loses the Arkansas-UCLA game. And then they'd have to beat whoever was 2-0 twice. So you're talking about 4 straight wins. That's just to get to the World Series. And then you'd have to win 2 out of 3. So if whoever loses that game, I mean, I mentioned Arkansas is plus 195, LSU plus 230. They'll probably dip, I would think, you know, not all the way to double digits, but they're going to be pretty healthy. That's where maybe I just throw a pizza money bet on the loser, since you are getting really good value. Just understand they're going to have to win basically 4 straight and 6 of 7 in order for that to happen.
Last one before we switch to some NBA. One word answer. Who wins it?
Arkansas.
Okay. Arkansas it is.
Not to be the chalky guy in a college. No, in a sport like baseball. But
I asked you the question. You answered it.
I did.
Yeah. Let's switch to the NBA. Speaking of you are. Are you starting to believe, is this actually going to happen? Are the Pacers going to do the unthinkable, finish off the sports movie that they've been writing here for the last month or so, and actually win this championship?
No, but this has all the makings of Game 7, OKC, and we've seen how the blueprint is. You either have to, you know, definitively beat Indiana by margin, or else you are asking for trouble the way they've been able to execute in all these close games. But, you know, think about it. OKC should have been up 2-0. I mean, how often do you blow a lead like the situation the Thunder win in game one? And if you were telling me, Will, before the series, like, what's the path for Indiana, I would say, well, it's probably got to be a series where the Thunder have to win 5 games. And by win 5 games, I mean they've got to have one game won and then just, you know, completely throw it away. And that's what's happened so far. So you got to think here that you have to think OKC bounces back, and the market certainly is expecting them to do so in game 4. But by no means do I think this is just, all right, well, OKC will get the wake-up call. They'll pull they'll pull what they did in Minnesota and, you know, kind of find a way to grind one out on the road and then just put the clamps down and roll here. I expect this to come, we know it's certainly, unless Indiana wins in 5, it's going to come back to Banker's Life for a game 6. And I expect Indiana, like, I'm already prepared for that situation to look to bet on Indiana. If they were down 3-2 at home in game 6, I'd like them to do that. And kind of comes down to game 7 for me, Will. So that's way more live. I mean, if you had said Thunder in 7 pre-series, that would have paid out what? I mean, north of like 4-1. That was pretty significantly the third or fourth best choice, probably, what, behind OKC in 5, OKC in 6, and OKC in 4. So yes. I think that's where we're at now, which is a great accomplishment, just reflecting the odds. And anytime you go to a game seven, as much as I'd still favor OKC and think they win, you know, you're playing with gas there if you're Indiana. So I got a buddy who's got a future, like a win it all future on Indiana. And it's funny, he hedged, you know, he's tried to monetize. He played a bunch of like OKC in five, a bunch of like series exactas.
Yeah.
And I told him, I'm like, I was looking at it and I'm going, man, the only way you get screwed is if OKC wins in seven.
Oh no.
And I think that's probably where we're headed, unfortunately for him.
Oh,
but
no.
That's what I'm thinking at this point.
What, is there any bet to be made? OKC laying six here for game number four, 225.5, and then about a minus 240 favorite for the series. Would you try to still go exact and play OKC in seven? Like what bet could you make here? Is you know, looking at these, you could play over 6.5 games, is only plus 105. Thunder in seven right now is plus 170. I don't know if that there's great value, but you tell me.
If you're picking between the two, it would be, I would just do Thunder in seven versus the game to go seven at plus 105. And part of that is you're going to get, I mean, I think there's going to be another opportunity to bet Indiana at home. So I would stay away from the game four on the side. I think the totals are what interests me, Will, because, you know, games one and two both should have gone under. The game two only went over because you had, what, 16 points in like 55 seconds in garbage time.
Right.
But it made sense that OKC, the better defensive team, as much as Indiana has been playing amazing defense, and they did so in game three, but the better defensive team limited the pace of Indiana, right? It made a lot of sense. So I really thought game three was going to go to an over pace, and it started fast. And yet OKC just, I mean, they got completely bogged, throttled down by Indiana defensively. That to me is the big adjustment that I see Mark Daigneault and the Thunder making in game four. And there've been stretches where it seems like Jalen Williams, Chet Holmgren, even SGA to an extent have been sped up a little bit by the Indiana pace. And as a result, it almost seemed like they almost tried to revert too much. And we saw a lot of just dribbling out the clock to six on the shot clock, ISO ball, one-on-one dribbling that just didn't really work in their favor. So I imagine we see some tweaks there where the Thunder, they kind of embrace that pace a little bit, since you figure in a game four, Indiana has a better chance to control that. And I see OKC being able to run out a little bit more, get into their offensive sets in a more efficient way, get better, cleaner looks. And that's why, as much as game three, I was kind of surprised to see it go under. The way the market is now adjusting, I kind of like an over here in game four to push back and look the other way in that little, you know, seesaw teeter totter, how that's working so far. So just pulling it up, seeing where the market is at here, and you know, we're getting 225.5. I mean, this was a total that was pushing near 230. That's a big drop to me in a series where as much as you give credit to the defenses of both teams, and especially Indiana for how much better they've been than maybe anticipated. I got to think this is a spot where, you know, Indiana's still going to be going super high flying fast. And we have to see a better offensive effort from OKC and a more efficient effort from SGA. So that's my best angle for game four. And if you had to make me bet here the series, I would say OKC in seven.
You're a Wisconsin guy. Sounds like the Giannis to stay is picking up steam. That's the more likely.
Yeah.
I guess that would be the favorite right now. What does Milwaukee do? What should Milwaukee do?
Well, it was minus 150 that he would stay when they first posted it, which I think was interesting because most people, you know, nationally just thought, all right, he's gone. Like, it's a done deal. And the Spurs were the second favorite just because this was right after the lottery. So you figured, all right, well, they've got the two, you know, number two pick now. They could make some big package. I felt this whole time, you can call me a homer, Will. You're not afraid to call me names for making blasphemous statements. I felt the whole time like he was staying. Partially because of like his connection to Milwaukee, which I don't think anybody cares to do the research on or understand. But this is a guy who was drafted and whose family was basically living on the streets in extreme poverty, and has basically looked at Milwaukee as this saving grace sort of city. And like, he at one point was like, well, there was a time in his rookie year, Will, where he mailed home money from a Western Union and to his parents because, you know, they needed money, and he had to have a stranger give him a ride to the Bradley Center at that time because it was like 10 degrees out and he was walking 5 miles to the arena. Like, that's the sort of relationship he has with the city. I don't think he wants to leave in any way. I think with the Bucks, the issue Milwaukee's gotten into is they almost, you know, they've given him so much leverage and so much decision-making power that, I mean, how many times have we seen the NBA player GM, the GM part of it goes extremely poorly? I mean, Giannis picked his coach. He picked Adrian Griffin. That was a disaster in many respects. He kind of picked his roster. Jrue Holiday was the guy, the guy who had to be the odd man out, the player who was who wore the brunt of blame for the disastrous series to Miami a couple years ago. That was a huge mistake. And you know, not that you could have ever predicted Damian Lillard would come in and all of a sudden have a, you know, a hugely severe you know, potential heart condition that would threaten the potential of his career. So, you know, those decisions all were kind of endorsed and in many ways pushed on by Giannis. I don't think, you know, if you're a Bucks fan like I am, you sit here and go, look, this has been the best thing that's ever happened to your franchise. You got a title out of it. I never thought in a million years I would see a title in my lifetime, Will. So I'm of the camp of it, whatever it takes to keep Giannis there, he's earned the right to do whatever he wants, as much as that might not be the optimal plus EV franchise building move. He's won you a title. He deserves to be kept there and be made happy. That's my take. It's probably unpopular, but it's why I think they're doing everything they can to, as much as they are now hamstrung by the cap and the second apron, they're doing whatever they can to say, look, what do you want? What can we do to keep you here? Because we know you want to stay. We know we have that relationship. And I think that's the path they're going down. And they'll probably be a severely flawed team next year, but have Giannis and at least be live in the East just because of how bad the East has been. And I think that's totally fair. You don't need to shake things up because you can't really right now. There's just no avenues for the Bucks to do that based on where they're at, and they don't have any draft picks.
Is there an offer that would make you actually want to trade him? Like the Spurs just say, hey, our second pick, Castle, what is it, the 14th pick, just take all this stuff, Vassell, you name it, and that's actually the better route for Milwaukee?
No, I don't know. But the issue is, I think any of these trades that make sense, the more you dive into it, is they've got to be three-team trades, and they've got to involve because the Bucks don't own any of their own picks, right? So it's got to involve teams that have picks that would come to Milwaukee that could actually be worth anything in the future. Because like let's say you're trading Giannis, and you're going to get all these potential trades are like, you know, yeah, you trade Giannis for Castle, and you get a crap ton of picks, and I get that you'd have number two this year, but all those future firsts for San Antonio, they're not going to mean anything. It's going to be like right. 25 to 30. So you got to have a third team, and that's where it gets really tricky. Like there's a bunch of, you could look at anything and pick out certain spots where it's like, okay, we're going to get X amount, X two or three players for Giannis plus picks. But until you knew what the other team would be and how the contracts would match, it's really hard for me to see Milwaukee, ever wanting to pull the trigger on that unless they had a third party. And now you get into, we're talking three team deals. You're talking, 11, 12 players if you're including the picks involved. And that's where it gets really messy. And it's also part of the reason why I think with Giannis wanting to be there anyway, and the Bucks are going to need an amazing offer. I don't necessarily think because of the way that pick structure works, they're going to get one that makes them over the moon to want to trade him.
Ben, appreciate it, man. Good luck with who's it? Jacob Mizorowski, is that the prospect going tonight for the Brewers?
Yeah, pumped to see him. Yeah, Brewers Cardinals. He's a Missouri guy going against.
Wow,
going against his hometown team. Will, you can't dream it up. So yeah, it's not bad. Have you ever been to American Family Field?
I have not. Is that a must go to?
Yeah, I mean, if you like, perfect summer nights and grilling Italian sausage and bratwurst in the parking lot, then it's for you,
Say less.
Okay. Let's get you out there.
Ben, appreciate it, man. This is awesome. You do a great job. Always fun when we can catch up. Let everyone know where we can find you.
Likewise, my man. Always great to be on. I'm at Ben_Wilson_1. Gil Alexander makes a lot of fun of me every time I come on with my handle, but haven't changed it since freshman year of high school. We're gonna keep it that way. I can't wait. I get to host with you too on VSiN in a couple weeks. So always looking forward to that, man. And be well. Appreciate you having me on.
Record shattering ratings are expected for that program.
Yes, 100%. Tune in,
Ben. Appreciate it, man. Thanks.
See ya.